Hi, everybody. My name is Martin Chaffarini. Thank you for joining us at this extra special interview about Luger. If you love films that have narrative quicksand, strong-armed robberies, people you care about, and a whole lot of broken arms, you've come to the right place. So I am thrilled to be speaking with the creative team, the producer, co-writer, Bruno Martin and company, to talk about Luger, one of my favorite top three films of Fantastic Fest. Let's get this show started. This is like if you took Layer Cake and Inception. You've got crime, you've got layer upon layer, where it gets worse and worse and worse. So, put yourself in the mind of the two characters. How do you keep going when you know everything is... Help!
Creo que he pillado casi todo, pero hazme una...
Vale, dice que esto es un poco como una mezcla entre Ley y Orden...
Lo último.
Que cómo los dos personajes principales, cómo crees que siguen adelante cuando todo cada vez se les va poniendo
peor. Peor.
Ok, one second.
Bueno, yo creo que cuando la cosa empieza a ponerse cada vez peor, ya la necesidad de seguir adelante por el uno y por el otro es la necesidad de salvar a su compañero, ¿no? Que hoy, por cierto, leí en la sinopsis del catálogo que somos hermanastros.
Ah, sí, maravilloso.
Y bueno, me parece interesantísimo.
Sí, sí,
esa
sí,
lectura. Por eso. Como sí. Santi, ¿no?
Ok, vale.
Ok, David is the Rafa, okay, the main character. So he thinks that the energy which pushes his character going through and through, even when the situation is worse, is the necessity to save his partner. You know, he finds interesting that he read in the catalog that they are stepbrothers, which is an interesting lecture because it's not in the story, but at the same, it's kind of their relationship between both of them, right?
Y una de las cosas que tanto a Bruno, bueno, sé que a Bruno también le gusta explorar, es esa falta de muchos valores que puede haber entre gente como Rafa o Tony en esas profundidades. Pero uno de esos rasgos que siempre está en la gente que no tiene nada es, desde luego, la lealtad.
La lealtad, sí.
Okay. So he thinks that one thing that Bruno explores in his story is that these kind of characters, you know, from unfavorable districts, you know, they have a lack of values and of morality, but at the same time they have a strong feeling of loyalty, and they keep stick to that loyalty.
Sí, la verdad que los dos personajes son muy distintos. Son dos personas que dices físicamente, la forma de pensar, son muy diferentes, pero hay algo que les une efectivamente, y es esa lealtad, esa hermandad de barrio, que somos los tíos de barrio, que les une mucho.
Sí, hace hincapié en la lealtad de barrio, que
claro,
es diferente a la lealtad.
Es una lealtad que se tiene cuando has vivido, digamos, bajo unas familias muy humildes, con muchos problemas sociales, pero eso siempre es como algo que ellos les forja como algo muy, muy potente en lo que es su relación.
Okay, so he thinks that one thing that unites these two characters, because these two characters are very different physically and psychologically also, but what unites them is this strong bond of the hood loyalty. You know, like they grew up in the hood, in a non-favorable environment, with social problems, you know, low-rent families, you know, they don't have this kind of access to a privileged life, you know. So they develop this kind of loyalty, hood loyalty, when they come from this kind of environment that is a humble environment. Mm-hmm. Humble environment where if you don't unite, the energies from outside will eat you.
Gotcha.
I want to do that, but that Bruno and I, when we were writing the screenplay, we decided that not just to put this loyalty, but also to make the audience care about this character. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, sometimes we fall in this trap that we put a character from a humble environment, but we don't give them characteristics that makes this character unique and lovable by the audience. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even if they have lack of morality, the audience likes them.
Sure.
Yeah.
I liked you guys.
Thank you.
And I like where you come in the beginning of something, you know something's going on. You seem like pros. You know what you're doing, good loyalty, you've done this before. And then you meet somebody who's stronger than you.
Yeah.
You meet somebody who's more dangerous than you.
Yeah.
And everywhere you go, there's more dangerous people. And you realize, I'm playing T-ball. You know, con los niños poquito. When there's bigger, badder people everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The guy in the cafe, the guy who owns the garage. Like, and that would cause most people to just, I'm out, I'm going to work at Home Depot, you know. But you keep going. So it's so, because you care about the characters, you want them to triumph. And that's not a question there. It's like
a rough information. Okay.
And then, I'm glad that your arm's doing better. Did it take a long time to heal?
I'm better. Yeah. I
Nordia, yeah. 2 days and
fine. I'm a strong man.
Ibuprofen.
Well, the other thing is you play in. I feel it's both timeless, but both 70s. What was a period in film that Bruno and Santiago, you said, we need to tap into what Clint Eastwood was doing, or Robert Redford, or Alan J. Pakula? Basically inspirations of a time in cinema.
Vale, dice que la película realmente es atemporal, ¿vale? Porque puede ocurrir aquí en cualquier momento, pero le da también la sensación un poco de cine de los 70, ¿no? Dentro de que está situado ahora. Entonces, para inspirarnos en este periodo de la película, un poco qué inspiración.
Los referentes, pues más o menos. Mira, referentes tenemos claros a Walter Hill, all his movies, The Warriors, 48 Hours.
Sí.
Yes, that is a classic bad movie. Street Tour, Training Day, or Crank. Jason Statham.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
My older brother.
Yes.
You know, you're the better looking one.
Thank you very much. I love you.
All that movies.
The
has,
same thing.
The same. Structure.
Okay.
On one day,
two
guys, a body movie. You know, Nueve Reinas, Fabian Levinsky with Ricardo Darín.
They made an American remake.
Nine Queens, maybe. There is a remake with John C. Reilly and Diego Luna called The Criminal. Or Criminal. It's a remake or that film. Okay, it's a movie around two thieves. No, ¿cómo se dice estafadores?
Scammers.
Scammers. One day, and that kind of films is always inspiration for me. Y para no irme un poco de la pregunta, estás solo estamos hablando de lo que es la estética o por qué. Vale, pues traduce esto. El por qué es un poco atemporal es básicamente porque, claro, estamos muy influidos por ese cine de los 70, 80 y 90, uh-huh. Sobre todo 80 y 90. Pero básicamente es que a mí personalmente, y tú ya lo sabes escribiendo conmigo, esto se lo puedes decir de manera personal, nunca nos ha gustado la actualidad en la que vivimos. Yo siempre digo que yo tendría que haber nacido 40 años antes, ¿vale? Para hacer cine en los 80, que es la época más divertida, y ahora estarme muriendo porque no soporto esta era de mierda.
Okay, like he says also a reason why we both write this movie timeless is because Bruno told like okay I like to write stories kind of settled in periods before, because Luger is not settled in a period before, they use smartphones, they did everything, but he said like actually he doesn't like the current period of time, you know, the current life we are living, so he thinks like he had to be born 40 years before to do cinema in the 80s, which was the funniest and wildest period of cinema, and right now start dying because of all the shit that it's around.
Perfecto.
We love the past.
Yeah. Well, it's sad. I mean, you get the title card come up as you would expect to see in Bullet or movies of that era. Mm-hmm. And I was just talking to another filmmaker, and we're lamenting that film feels not only repetitive, but safe. And mm-hmm. so when you do push boundaries, you do go to a point where 48 Hours, Marty Brest, how do I say this? The jokes are great, but the bullets are real. You know, there's no safe zones. So I love that this film went for it, and just when you think it's bad enough, you meet somebody else, and it just kept getting worse. So there's levels of intrigue that are so well done. And how do you put yourself into Tony and Rafi? How do you think like them? I want to know about the first scene where you kick the guy over the table. Is he okay, by the way? That stuntman, I think he should have got paid more for falling over. Like, how do you put yourself in this aggressive mindset?
Vale. Mira, pues os comento. Lo primero es un comentario respecto a lo que hemos hablado antes del cine, ¿vale? Dice que las películas actualmente son todas como repetitivas y seguras. Seguras en el sentido de que son eso, que van a lo que funciona, ¿no? A la estructura básica, como si estuviesen prácticamente hechas con ahí, aunque no, eso no lo ha dicho él, ¿no? Entonces dice que, por ejemplo, que la película está de 48 horas que habéis mencionado, que las bromas son naturales y que además las balas son reales, no hay un lugar seguro, ¿no? Dice que que Luger lo que le ha gustado es que no es segura, es arriesgada, que se encuentra con algo malo y en vez de resolverlo va cada vez a peor, y que eso le parece que está muy bien hecho porque inyecta esa adrenalina, ¿no? Ese sentimiento de no saber lo que va a pasar en el espectador, ¿no? Y luego ya empieza con la pregunta en la cual os pregunta a vosotros dos, ¿cómo os metisteis en el mindset, ¿no? en los personajes de Tony y Rafa? Quiere volver a esa primera escena, que es la primera escena en la que salís vosotros, ¿no? A cómo hacéis ese primer acercamiento inicial a los personajes, cómo esos personajes establecen su relación en esa primera secuencia, y luego ya hace la broma de qué tal está el especialista, que después de esa patada, si se ha recuperado o no, y que esto creo que va para ti, le deberíais haber pagado más.
Todo el mundo la película.
Yo creo que el especialista no quedó bien nunca porque ya venía mal de serie. O sea, ya lleva muchas patadas en su vida.
Bueno, yo creo que nosotros en parte también somos de alguna forma similares a Tony y Rafa, en el sentido de que si se fija, Rafa da dos hostias en toda la película.
Pero buenas.
Pero que a lo mejor Rafa es un poco más racional y es un tío que ha aprendido del barrio sin tener que mancharse demasiado las manos, porque tiene las manos de Tony, claro, para eso. Y Tony, bueno, pues no es la persona más rápido de pensamiento, pero sí de puña. Entonces, en la vida real, Mario, un poco es así también.
Se complementan bien, uno es la agudeza y otro las, las soluciones físicas, integrales.
Digamos que en una vida pasada, Mario podría haber resuelto sus problemas a hostias, el actor.
No, siempre.
Pero ya tiene una edad, ya tengo una edad en la cual ya no me meto en esos problemas.
Vale, vamos a ver.
Ok. So, si quieres luego continuar en los bosses, por favor, quedarnos sobre la primera escena, que eso
no, tranquilo. Dale.
Vamos a ver. So the first thing is that the stone man came like that by default because he had already fallen and suffered a lot of aggression before in previous footages. So you know, we cannot do anything about that. We let him as he was in a default state mode.
dile que eso sí, que Joaquín es el especialista, que ya es un loco y que le encanta y que aporta ese tipo de cosas y las ha metido él.
Actually, Joaquín, he's the chief of stuntmans, okay? He's a crazy guy, and actually he risks his health, you know, in every film or series he does, and you know, he loves doing this kind of crazy shit.
Okay.
Actually, some of that shit was his idea.
Oh, no,
it was not his idea. Okay, so what David said is that Tony and Rafa are similar to David and Mario, because you know, Rafa, he just how to say, he gives two punches in the movie. You know, like he becomes aggressive twice in the movie, just because his strong point is being sharp, mm-hmm. okay, and his weakness is more the physical, which is the strong point of Tony. See, Tony is Rafa is sharp. And Tony is the physical solution, you know,
yeah.
for everything. So that's how they work, and how that's how they complement themselves perfectly. So they are kind of similar to Tony and Rafa. And then Mario added that in a previous version of himself, of Mario the actor.
When I was younger.
When he was younger, he might be more like Tony, you know, solving problems just with a big punch in the face, you know, and like this, you know, problem solved.
Yeah.
In the 90s.
Okay.
In the 90s.
Not now.
Now he's older,
all your joints
he's a stable, he's a calm guy, he joined, you know, this kind of Zen cults, and all that stuff. No, I invented that. So, he's more Zen, he's more calm, and you can see him like that, you know, that's the way. ¿Queréis añadir algo de la primera escena?
No, tampoco que pregunte.
No, la primera escena realmente se ve que ya hay una unión entre ellos y se entiende ya de primeras que tienen un poco esos roles cogidos y que cada uno sabe lo que tiene que hacer sin que casi tengan que decirse nada.
Sí, que según empieza la película están bien presentados.
Claro,
los
eso es.
Sí,
exactamente. En esta primera escena es que we wanted the four of us, you know, the two actors playing the roles and we as writers. We wanted to show how these characters work. So we defined these roles. Rafa as the sharp guy, Tony as the physical solution, just because, you know, there's this moment when they he says like, okay, I'm going to go to the garage. I said like, are you sure you want to go to the garage? Because here there's going to be a fight, okay?
Yeah,
that's why he stays in the cafe, he goes to the garage, because there will be a fight for sure in the cafe and not in the garage, so the sharp solution goes to the garage.
Right, okay.
Well, I love the structure of that, because one is the sword and one is the shield,
mm-hmm.
or one is the left brain, one is the right brain.
Yeah.
And it, again, makes you think about character, like Training Day, for instance,
mm-hmm.
you know, other or 48 Hours without the jokes. So it's all very smart, because mm-hmm. it's not just Liam Neeson, Jason Statham. You know, you have more of a dynamic. So, as a producer, how do you help the vision reining in either creative ideas or the pocketbook or just, you know, I don't like it. You know, or how do your opinions inform what Santiago and Bruno are trying to do?
Esa es solo la pregunta.
Vale. No, él lo que pregunta es que tú como productor, a la hora de afrontar este proyecto, ¿cómo nos encaminaste también con ideas creativas o qué, digamos, aportaste a lo que nosotros estábamos escribiendo, ¿vale? Para, pues eso, para desarrollar la historia.
Bueno, cuando yo entré en el guión, todo el talento y la fuerza estaban ya ahí. Se enfocó un poco a reducir la acción que había, acción física. Ven, si quieres contarlo y voy para que nos aburra, entramos cortos.
Okay, so when he entered in the screenplay stage, then he said like he already saw the talent and the strength of the story, but the story was too long and there was too much physical action, so he started reducing, containing it.
Eran peleas más largas, y claramente la aportación también, por un asunto de infraestructura, era que la acción fuera más corta. El valor que le dio Bruno, es importante, Bruno es el director y el montador de la película. Entonces, la película, sin esas peleas tan largas, tiene un montón de violencia sin tenerla, porque con el montaje expresa toda la latencia que tienen los personajes, toda la tensión, con lo cual al final es la misma película sin esas peleas tan largas, y gracias a esto que aporté, Bruno la llevó mucho más lejos con el talento como director y editor.
Yes, he said like the action scenes were longer and they have much more action. So what he did is to, you know, cut this action, just restrain it a little bit. And Bruno, as he's working not just as director and writer, but also editor of the movie, he will give his touch to this movie to show this violence in the movie without having to shoot fights all the time, you know, like the movie's edition is kind of violent, so you can see this violence without having it in the screen. It's the same movie that he found when he read the script, but without this longest action sequence and, you know, a huge action sequence, mm-hmm. More contained.
Gotcha. Y por último, hay algo muy bueno de trabajar con Bruno como director, y es que rueda lo que va a montar, exactamente. Eso, claro, tiene un ahorro de no rodar cosas que no se montan, y la posibilidad de lo que ruedas hacerlo bien porque tienes todo el tiempo para esas tomas. Entonces, Bruno tenía ese talento para ver rodar esto porque quería montar esto, y además ser un fabuloso editor, con lo cual creo que esa fuerza y esa energía está mucho en la película. Y es de lo que yo más contento estoy y de lo que me encanta la película. Y vamos a
ver. Okay. He said that he really loves the movie, and he thinks a very, very strong point about Bruno is that as he's the editor, he shoots what he's going to edit. He's not shooting sequences that they are not going to be in the final cut of the movie. So, like this, as a producer, he thinks that, well, I mean, he sees that they save money because they are not filming something that is not going to be in this final cut. And as Bruno is a great and talented editor, he can transmit this strength and energy in that final cut of the movie that is everything that he should in the movie.
No hay nada mejor para un productor o productor ejecutivo que un Blu-ray sin escenas eliminadas.
There's nothing better for an executive producer than a Blu-ray edition without scenes.
So the movie ends with, I would say, a sacrifice.
Yeah.
But I feel like the film has sacrifices throughout. You know, your arm. You know, the client that you were working with, and so you need sacrifices to grow. And so how do you see, you know, this might be too much to put on you right now, but like, do you like films with sacrifices? You feel like that's necessary for a story? Or was this mindset in line with how you saw Tony and Rafi growing?
Okay, vale. La última parte.
Sí, pero una cosa que te digo, simplemente antes de traducir Oscar, ha dicho que uno de los servicios que se hace es el del cliente, que eso es un poco, digamos, un spoiler, lo digo por si queréis que les comente algo acerca de esto, para que no salga o lo que sea.
No, ¿no? Pero no es spoiler, el sacrificio que hacen, dices que se ayuda mucho.
No, el sacrificio del cliente hablo de Ángel.
Ok, claro, pregúntalo. Es que no sé a qué te
refieres. A ver,
que
muere.
Excuse me, Mark.
Perdona, no, a ver, antes de traducir la pregunta de él y demás,
sí.
Él dice que la película se hace muchos sacrificios, y entonces han mencionado que uno de los sacrificios que se hace está diciendo básicamente que hace.
Ah, okay.
Entonces, no sé si quieres que le diga algo para que lo
pregúntale si eso es lo que hemos entendido bien, ¿vale? Eso para empezar. Vale, venga, si preguntas.
Because we are discussing, I'm going to translate the question for them, but we are discussing because, you know, when you mention the sacrifice of the client, you are mentioning the, you know, the rich guy. So we think that's kind of a spoiler. Sí, es eso, básicamente lo que
se refería.
Sí.
¿Entonces quieres que le diga que lo quite o...?
No, no sé.
No,
pero lo que es que es una película de sacrificios, pero que
sí.
No sepa quién.
Sí, vale. Y la pregunta es, porque podemos responder
sí.
Sin...
Sí, vale. Ok, you, because we're not going to mention that as it's a spoiler zone.
Yeah, it's okay.
So, lo que dice es que esta película es una película básicamente de sacrificio. No hay un sacrificio al final, pero durante
sí.
Toda la película se van sacrificando.
Sí,
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 ¿vale?
Vale.
Entonces... lo que sí que es importante es, ¿os gustan este tipo de películas en las que los personajes hacen sacrificios?
Sí.
¿Y cómo estos dos personajes de Tony y Rafa se han criado básicamente haciendo este tipo de sacrificios?
Vale, yo respondería a esta pregunta de la siguiente manera. Yo no es que no tengo predilección por las películas de sacrificios como
vale.
Tal. Es una película, la segunda oportunidad lleva implícito un pequeño sacrificio a veces,
vale.
En general. La segunda oportunidad es
pero,
y el perdón. Tiene un sacrificio, ¿vale?
Sí.
Yo soy una persona a la que a mí no me han brindado muchas segundas oportunidades las personas, ¿vale? Entonces, yo he querido dar, o sea, es decir, hablar de las segundas oportunidades porque a mí no me cuesta, llegué a un punto en el que no me cuesta brindarle una segunda ni una tercera oportunidad a la gente.
Vale.
Antes era una persona, digamos, diferente en ese aspecto, cambié y eso cuento a través de esta película. Las referencias de las películas que tenemos son las que hemos dicho, ¿vale? Pero no necesariamente el concepto de la película tiene que haber una referencia clara a una película, ¿sabes? Sino
vale.
Que es una cuestión personal de lo que hemos hablado a través de películas que nos han inspirado, ¿sabes? Podría
okay.
Ser más o menos. Mira.
Ah, okay. So, he said like he hasn't got a predilection for this kind of movies where the characters or situation like the characters do sacrifices. He wanted to say this movie as a movie about second chances. Actually, we want it, but he's talking about his personal side because this is a movie about second chances and about forgiveness.
Añade una cosa, que he tenido la mala suerte de que a mí no me han brindado segunda oportunidad. No quiero generalizar que las personas no den segunda oportunidad, ¿vale? Sino que yo la he tenido.
Sí, sí, sí.
A lo mejor porque soy gilipollas, ¿vale?
No, no
te quiero decir, pero sí, pero puedes incluirlo, puedes incluirlo.
No, no, no. Okay. So, this is a movie about second chances and forgiveness. And both of these things carry sacrifices with them. Because when you give a second chance, you sacrifice something. And you risk something also. And when you forgive, you sacrifice something and you risk also something. So, Bruno is saying that in his life, he got the bad chance that nobody gave him a second chance, or very few people gave him a second chance. And by his side, before he was like that, he would never give a second chance or forgive, but then he changed, because he didn't want it to live like that, and he didn't want to do to others what they've done to him. So, what he's saying is that we had a lot of movie references. We spoke before, Training Day, 48 Hours, but those movies have a reference like the concept, you know, like the Warriors or all of this. The concept is the same, but the movie is not the same because we are the ones talking about the second chances, about this kind of forgiveness, that it's another different kind of story.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have the concept as a reference, but not the structure, not the... You know, the subtext about the story. I will add about the Bruno question, if they allow me, me dejaría de responder como guionista también.
Claro, sí.
I will add because when we were writing this movie, Bruno and I, we have an anecdote, like Bruno and I, we are very, very good friends. Okay, and then I was moving out of Spain, and there was one night where I was writing him. And then he told me, like, why do you want to leave? And it's because I had nothing, you know, that get me, attached me to Spain. And then he just looked at me and he said, like, I'm happy for you because I got my visa. I recently got my visa, you know, to move to Japan. And then he looked at me and he told me, like, I'm happy for you, but fuck you. And then I realized one thing, that there was something I was not seeing, that my friends were the ones keeping me here because they wanted to be with me, you know? I felt like alone, I felt like I have nothing here to that keeps me staying in Spain, and suddenly I found friendship, I found warmth, and that all that those things, I have it before my eyes, but I couldn't see it. So when we started writing Luger, and then there was a moment that I told Bruno, like, you remember that conversation we had in the car? We have to put this in Luger, because there is one character who is trying to move on, there's another who wants to stay in his previous life, but at the same time, both of them, what they want is a second chance. As we wanted that second chance in the daily life we have.
Y esa escena se la llevó Mario.
He's a good friend. He's a good friend.
You are a good friend. Es mi última frase.
We are not superheroes. We are real people.
Clearly.
Is the sentence that say Johnny to Rafa in the car?
Yeah.
I'm happy for you, but fuck you. Is the last sentence that Rafa says to Tony at the end, at the bus.
We wanted to
you write what you know. You write what
exactly.
You know.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay.
Que se la dice en el coche al principio.
Claro, claro.
At the beginning and at the end, so we close the circle.
Exactly.
Claro.
Well, think about this way. And I use the term sacrifice because there's a difference between collateral damage. There's a difference between, like, war. Accidents happen. You can't predict. But let's look at this. Taken. I think there are no sacrifices, mm-hmm. no second chances.
Liam Neeson's Taken.
Yes.
Yeah.
He just keeps going. Sure, he saves his daughter, but what does he sacrifice? He gets together with his wife in the sequel, which is like, that's Transformers. No real sacrifice. Danger. Peril.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're dealing with, but no sacrifice. What was another one I was thinking of? Crono Crimes?
Yes,
Nacho Vigalondo.
Yes.
Time crimes, no?
Time crimes, yes.
Time crimes.
Some sacrifice, but it's more putting yourself in harm to save what you know. It's a weird, I love the ending.
Yeah.
But no movies that I can think of really walk this line. Even in Training Day, I don't think there was a sacrifice. So that makes this movie fresh, and it lets you grapple on to the characters and feel the danger, and it's tangible. So there were two other movies I was thinking of, but you know, they don't work either. So it's a concept. Oh, maybe one, Shaun of the Dead. The end of the movie. Ed stays back, because he's basically dead. It's not really a sacrifice. So it's like, even movies that you think do it well or have that, nobody has it. So, congratulations to Luger.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. ¿Qué es que te
no, no, yo creo que sí lo tenemos.
Vale.
Pero no había pregunta, ¿verdad?
No, había pregunta. Solo era comentario.
Ok, perfecto. Bien, que además esas...
Es un buen análisis porque yo ni lo había pensado.
Lo que iba a decir es que es curioso, o sea, es hermoso que cada uno, digamos, una película le inspire una serie de ideas, elementos o sensaciones. ¿Sabes? Eso es personal de cada uno y es muy bonito esta.
He thinks that it's very beautiful to see how different people have different lectures of the same movie. You know, it's like the same thing that David said before, previously, when he read that Tony and Rafa were stepbrothers, which they are not, but, you know, somebody who saw the movie lectured the movie like that, and it's beautiful also, because they have this kind of relationship. So Bruno feels it's very beautiful to that you can see the movie and lecture some things, and then you think about the movie like, okay, this movie's talking to me about this and that, and then we can see it different because maybe we didn't thought about this sacrifice, and then we are thinking about it and we're like, oh, probably, you know, like, they have a different point of view, and that's so beautiful and rich for us, you know?
Yeah.
Well, when you think of films being final, finite, versus TV, where it can just keep going and evolve. Do you think the strength of your film and being happy with it, that it is finite? Or do you think there's a world we could live in where your characters could be season two of Luger? Now we go after a bazooka or whatever.
Sí, básicamente lo que dice es que la película tiene un final claro, ¿no? Y que en las series, pues lo que se hace es que se continúa, ¿no? Entonces, claro, tú cómo enfocas Luger como un proyecto ya acabado. O que podría haber una evolución de sus personajes pues con la consecuente historia, ¿no?
Vale. No, la película no se hizo en un inicio con la intención de hacer una segunda parte. Creemos que es un final redondo, pero obviamente es un final abierto. O sea, redondo pero abierto, sin ninguna pretensión de hacerla. Y si quieres ahí tú puedes introducir, tenemos escrita una de hecho, junto con David, con Cerezo teníamos una idea de segunda parte, incluso una precuela. Creo que de momento está en el aire. ¿Quieres añadir algo más como guionista?
¿Qué personajes que se hicieron tan interesantes que podrían tener casi con su spin-off casi directamente? De la riqueza de los personajes. ¿Cómo se vuestra?
Sí, e incluso podrías meter la idea que tenemos, ¿vale? De que el universo Santos 117 sea un poco... Es como Kevin Smith, que tiene a Jay Gobel silencioso, ese universo creado, pues el nuestro comercial, el nuestro es el Santos 717.
Vale. So, voy a un poco a decir lo mismo que tú, pero más que nada, porque cuando hable de mi punto de vista, porque
la gente está de acuerdo. Me encanta porque le hacemos toda la mierda a Santi, es como, venga.
Actually, when we were writing Luger, I will talk about we, because, you know, we are agree on that. We never thought about a sequel, you know, continuing the story of these characters because we love the ending, the way it is. You know, we think it closes the circle, and you know, we think it's the perfect ending for this movie. It's a closed ending, but it's a perfect ending for this movie. It closes the circle, but at the same time, it's an open ending because you know you can continue the story. So it's true that Bruno and I, we spoke like, okay, if we ever do a sequel of Luger, maybe it will be 10 years after, you know, like, I don't know, he goes out of prison, you know, these kind of things, and anyway, we thought like, okay, we are going to do this, if we are going to do a sequel, it will be, yes, a long time after the first one, you know, but once we finish it, and we saw the movie, we thought like, okay, maybe actually we can do something interesting. So we started thinking with David and Raul, you know, they were also helping with the creative team, about making an immediate sequel for Luger, you know, like, okay, what happens if we continue the story from the point it has finished? And we're going to mention for obvious reasons.
Like Crank.
Okay? Yes, exactly, like Trump, exactly. And then we started developing a story, and also we thought like, okay, maybe we can do that, or we can do a prequel, because in the Luger first Luger movie, they say like the story about David coming from Canary Islands, you know, to Spain. So we said like, okay, maybe we can do this story.
So you're gonna go Godfather 2 with this. You're gonna tell Don Corleone.
Exactly.
Something like that. Yes.
And then also we were thinking of, okay, and there are so many interesting characters that we can make a spin-off of another different character of the movie, because you know like there are many different characters. Actually, we thought about
there is one very important character in the movie. That is the industrial area.
I was going to say.
Claro, uno de los personajes más importantes es el polígono. Entonces ese es, digamos, el nexo unión del universo.
But I was going to say about the gypsy character, Mauricio.
No, me reyes con eso.
Okay. Because we also thought about spin-off anyway. But what we saw when we were thinking about all this sequel, the spin-off, the prequel, we thought like the best thing about this is the universe we have created in this industrial area, that it's a character itself.
The best are Tony and Rafa, okay?
Apart from Tony and Rafa, the best is the industrial era, Santos 117, which is a character itself. It's that kind of industrial era that is swallowing our characters, that is not going to let them go, you know? As we said in the promotion phrase, you know, in the log line of the tagline of the movie. So, you know, we want to do more movies in this industrial area. You know, mm-hmm. like, okay, even the same characters can show up or not, we don't know yet, because we are writing new projects, and maybe we will have an appearance of Tony and Rafa, we don't know, but what is sure is that we want to settle some of these new projects in this industrial area, the Santos 170.
Well, what's interesting about this is it shows that it's more set in real life than you think. You know, The Thing is perfect. It ends, you don't want any more.
Yeah.
That is isolated. With this, everybody has a boss. As you show in the film, the more people you meet, the more dangerous people are out there. You know, you cross the street, there's even worse. You know, even in like, in Philadelphia, you have the Steelers and you have the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
Steelers may be great. Oh no, the Eagles are good. Like, there's always bigger, badder, you know, sharks everywhere. So I love the idea of thinking this big, but I'm just happy that this is out in the world now because people can see how Tony and Rafa exist and dance between these people. The thing, I want to jump to one scene in the cafe.
Mm-hmm.
The offer is off the table. I'm going to use that with my kids
mm-hmm.
when they don't eat their food. Like, you eat your food, I give you a popsicle.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you didn't eat it? The offer's off the table. What were your favorite lines, both writing, both acting, both seeing this from the producer's chair?
Vale. Bueno, mira, lo que dices...
La última frase.
Sí, preferís que vaya directamente a...
Sí, yo creo que se ha entendido bien todo.
Sí, la última frase. Otra mejor
frase. Pues, ¿cuáles han sido nuestros diálogos favoritos de la película, ¿no?
Okay,
vamos respondiendo uno por uno.
Sí,
déjame pensar.
I am very sentimental. I love the final.
Okay.
I love the final there in the bus. All that happens in the bus.
Okay.
I think is brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is his best sequence?
No, I think it's because my best sequence is all the movies. Shut up! I think it is the final is the people when the people see the movie, all the people. See the final, watch the final, and all the people is
hallucinating.
Yeah.
Okay. For my side is the quote that I told you the story before. I'm happy for you, but fuck
mm-hmm.
you. For me, it's like the best line in the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
It resumes what I wanted to tell in the movie, and also you know like.
Por el concepto que significa. Pues yo una vez una frase, mi parte favorita, es cuando han llegado ya en la parte de la veterinaria hacemos alarde de la agudeza de Rafa. Rafa se da cuenta de que la abogada oculta algo, ella sale. The lawyer goes out from the. ¿Cómo se dice veterinaria?
Vet. Vet clinic.
To call Santa Mano.
Mm-hmm.
And Rafa is smart. ¿Se da cuenta?
Sí.
Notice. And he turned to her while Kike is telling about the story of the Luger.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks her and he's. His heart broke because it noticed that
Yeah, she's betraying them, like he can't trust her anymore.
Es mi momento favorito.
Yeah, his best his favorite moment of the movie is not lying itself, is that quiet moment when we notice about Rafa's intelligence and Rafa's instinct when he notices that the lawyer is betraying them.
Sí, eso.
She's speaking outside the bed shop.
Ese plano y todo lo que simboliza y hasta dónde han llegado estos dos señores en ese momento.
She's talking out of the bed shop. He's looking at her. His heart broke because he trusted her and she's betraying them. And this moment shows everything that the character were evolving and growing up until they arrived to that moment.
Claro. Y para concluir es que obviamente ahí se ve el carácter tan engranado, o sea, el engranaje que forma entre los dos, que David, o sea, que Rafa, le ordena a Tony que se vayan, y Tony, sin comprender bien qué es lo que está pasando, confía en él plenamente.
Yes, he says, like, that proves the loyal and the strong bond that they have between these two, because Rafa tells Tony that they have to leave, and Tony doesn't know what's exactly happening. He's confused. He's injured, but still he trusts Rafa.
Y
ya lo veo. Ya, a ver, la película para mí es muy complicado sacar un momento preferido, la de los San Fermín, quizás. No, mentira. Pero
it's a creo joke, que mi momento es a joke of,
it's,
of us.
Es a joke of the movie.
It's an inside joke.
Pero creo que, pensando y también teniendo las que ellos han dicho como de las prefes, me gusta mucho la conversación en plano secuencia en el bar entre el personaje que hace Bruno y el que hacía este hombre, no me acuerdo cómo se llamaba.
Adrián.
En el que yo no hablo, pero estoy flipando todo el rato intentando calmar los nervios de los dos púgiles. Esa, me parece que la tensión en esa secuencia concreta es maravilla.
Y a ver, bueno, ¿la gusta este?
Sí. His favorite moment, no, it's not also a line, it's a moment of the movie when they are in this bar, they are looking for the gun, and there is this guy who has the gun, you know, the Nazi guy, and then, you know,
Nazi
like, it's Bruno's character, Charlie, and this guy, and then, you know, like, he's trying to calm down the situation because he doesn't want the situation to explode. No, that's his favorite moment because you can feel the tension on that scene.
And you're talking about the part where the guys behind him bring the knife out?
Yes.
That
moment.
Bueno, hay una cosa que se pierde mucho en el cine actual y es el retener las secuencias y hacerlas más largas por la generación de TikTok. Entonces, yo mi punto preferido es desde que llegan al desguace, cómo va subiendo la tensión, cómo se dilata, cómo van entrando al despacho, cómo se llena el despacho, la violencia maestra del montaje, la agresividad de la música es muy violenta en esta película, tiene un montón de sangre sin tenerla, y luego realmente se resuelve en 5 golpes, y parece que ha sido un peleón de 57. Disfruto muchísimo de esos 15 minutos, te diría que hay pocas cosas en el cine
en
España igual, 13
sí.
Son. Sí. Disfruto, pero como un niño cada vez que la veo, digo, eso es un punto álgido. Y lo mejor es que funciona con el público, de muerto, o sea, están todos con la boca abierta, que se moca con el brazo roto. Creo que es maestría absoluta.
Pero no metamos lo del brazo roto.
No, bueno,
para no, si cuentas la idea, no metes lo del brazo roto.
So, for him, his best moment, the favorite moment of the movie, you know, is that the first thing that he said is that he loves that in this movie we are not trying to cut the sequence or shorten the sequence on purpose. To, you know, arrive to this TikTok generation where you can watch a scene in 30 seconds in TikTok.
Yeah.
Actually, we do the opposite. We try to, you know, make it longer, wide the sequence, so you can feel more and more tension until it explodes.
Mm-hmm.
So this sequence in the sequence in the junkyard when they are entering the, you know, Santa Mano's office. And then, you know, the characters start coming inside, and the action doesn't explode. And once it explodes, you feel like it's a full sequence of action. Actually, they hit each other like 5 times, but it feels like it's way more because you just want it to explode because you cannot stay more, you know, with this tension. Because
they hold you down and it's all very close.
Yes, exactly. So it's
el uso del uno de el gran angular, importante eso.
It's a 13 minute sequence that feels actually like 30 minutes, you know? And how Bruno edited the sequence, how he filmed it with the wide screen, also how the music works in that.
All the movie is with 50 millimeters.
Okay.
Yeah. Optic,
and this sequence is 11. The camera is 10 centimeters from the actor.
Wow.
The camera
here. Yeah, they work with special lenses, close lenses in those scenes, and also the music plays a very important role in this scene.
Okay.
Well,
speaking of music, the Wave by Nook. Nope.
Yeah,
I like that.
The last song is very beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
No, ¿yo qué?
¿Que viene de ti? ¿De dónde viene esa canción?
Esa friend of him.
No, que tengo unos colegas que tuvieron este grupo que se llamaba Nook, y cuando estaba Bruno buscando la canción para cerrar la peli, pues no sé, me imagino que todos le mandaríamos alguna propuesta y esto, que son mis socios en realidad, que tenían un grupo, típico grupo de gente que no, que se agarra a su último momento de juventud y que hicieron y que ya murió el grupo. Que a ver si ahora por culpa de Nuba tiene que volver el grupo.
Me alegraría muchísimo.
El guitarrista era un gilipollas.
Okay, the song The Wave by Nook comes from this band that they are friends of David. And actually, you know, like when they were looking for a song to close the movie, he sent it to Bruno, and Bruno loved it. And actually, it's a group of friends from David that actually it's already split it, because, you know, they just grabbed their last moment of youth, they played a little bit, and then, you know, they dissolved the band. But maybe, we don't know what's going to happen. Maybe with Luger, they will reunite again.
That's great.
And the player guitar is very, 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 a very, very kind people. No.
Well, if it's not too late, I'm wondering what you think about a tagline. Do you think this should say, "Crime doesn't pay, it costs you," or "Crime backfires"? I don't know. What do you think about that?
Okay. A ver cómo es exactamente la traducción.
Dice que
crime
doesn't pay, it costs you,
right?
Yeah. El crimen no se paga, claro, no sé cómo se paga en España, el crimen no paga, pero te cuesta, ¿sabes?
Mm.
Y la otra era, el crimen te estalla en la cara, ¿no? Porque el backfire es cuando tú disparas la pistola te estalla en la cara.
Vale, yo creo que...
Es la anécdota de el que había era parecido a ese...
No, pero no vamos a contarla porque esa batalla la perdimos.
Vale.
Si quieres contárselo él a modo personal, bien, pero la perdimos. Básicamente dile que es que en inglés todo suena espectacular, que en español es mucho más complicado.
We love the taglines that you propose. Like, actually, in English, everything sounds so spectacular, but in Spanish, the translation, it sounds so bad.
No, I don't say that.
No, I'm just letting you know that. It doesn't sound as cool as in English.
Yes, en España, todo lo que es lo americano, la gente que hemos vivido con el cine americano, nos encanta absolutamente todo, ¿sabes? Es decir, yo nací en Detroit, ¿vale? O yo nací en Puente Tocino, Murcia, ¿sabes? No es lo mismo.
Pero bueno, para ellos a lo mejor dicen, Puente Tocino.
Yeah.
Claro,
sí, as we grew up with American cinema, everything in English sounds, you know, spectacular, huge, and it's like,
the name of the cities,
yes, it's not the same saying, like, I was born in Detroit, that I was born in Puente Tocino, Murcia, you know, so...
It's horrible. Puente Tocino, Murcia, horrible. Detroit, wow.
Detroit is cool.
Even
in Texas,
English,
cool.
Like,
Los Angeles, cool.
How will say,
Seattle,
like,
cool.
Peak Bridge,
yes,
Murcia,
yes, like,
looks
yes.
good.
No.
Well, let's look at your shirt for a second.
Mine?
Yeah, Army of Darkness. Oh, God, that's just gracias.
It's an L?
L?
L,
sorry. right? That's fine. I learned that Army of Darkness, even in the UK, which you would think the language is somewhat compatible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Captain Supermarket.
Oh.
What?
I remember. Definitely did
sí,
too, that too.
Sí,
okay.
Yeah. The Incredible Hulk in Korea is the man who has two faces. What? So I get what you mean.
Do you know The Sixth Sense, right?
Yeah.
The Sixth Sense in China was named He is the Ghost.
No shit!
Spoiler!
Bueno, en España tenemos un spoiler buenísimo también.
¿Cuál?
La semilla del diablo.
La semilla del diablo.
Oh, fuck. Yeah.
Babies.
Rosemary's
Rosemary
is called the seed of the devil.
Oh, no way.
Yes, or something crazy like, but we like it very much. Die Hard is La Jungla de Cristal, the glass jungle.
The glass
jungle.
It's great, it's great, it's very great.
It worked for the first movie,
yeah.
Not for the others.
or Godfellas is uno de los nuestros, one of us.
One of us.
Ah, I like that. That's good.
Bueno, está bien.
You'll like him. He's one of us. He's a good fellow. Well, guys, you have. Like, Jaws makes you scared of the water, Luger makes me scared of going to get my car worked on. So forever when I see a garage or my car shop, I think something bad's going down there. Thank you so much for time. Raul, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hola, paciencia.